Summer replacement show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I even knew you were going to say that.
You did.
You're it was the 500,000th time, so I thought you might say it.
I all of a sudden have a poodle in my lap. She came out of nowhere. So.
Oh. Just dropped in?
Yep. She usually doesn't bother me during the show, but
interesting.
I'm gonna come say
now,
hi.
Now, which of your menagerie is that?
That's Peach.
Oh yeah,
that's Peach, my 13-year-old poodle. Got about three teeth. So, how you doing, Pants?
It reminds me of a story. Actually, I had a friend who had an Australian terrier, I think it was, that had cancer. Poor thing, and it got to the place where it only had one tooth left in its head. And that everyone kept telling my friend, you should put your dog down. And she's like, no, I think this dog is here for a purpose. So she and some other friends of hers were meeting with the local bishop, who is very, very right wing guy. And they were going to talk with him about, you know, women's needs and women's issues and so on. And so he comes in and he goes over. The dog's name, by the way, was Attila the Honey. And so, the bishop comes in to their meeting, you know, with the coven or whatever he thinks he's getting into. Right. And he walks over to this couch and he starts to seat his very, very large Episcopal rump down on the couch. And Attila, that's Attila's spot, it turns out. And so Attila came barreling for the bishop's butt. That one tooth left in its head. It went right after him. And about a month later, Attila died, and my friend Anne was like, I knew that dog still had a purpose. one tooth left in its head, but wow, it fulfilled its mission, so.
that's the hero's journey right there. One last little lunge.
Went to little doggy Valhalla, I think, there, because he died in the line of battle, you know. Oh,
so how you doing?
So I've been watching the impeachment, second impeachment trial, and I have to say that it reminded me a lot of the Super Bowl, because it even though the one team is playing pretty well, it looks like the outcome is pretty predetermined. And the only thing I noticed that was really different is the commercials aren't nearly as good. So that's and it turns out one of the players is someone that everyone despises, so universally despises. So that's kind of good too. It really was like the Super Bowl.
I'm not sure. I thought I'd read that Ron Johnson skipped one of the days. Did you hear that, or is that
true? They're not allowed to do that, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he just
not allowed to. I don't know whether he did or not.
Maybe he just zonked out or something. But I don't know. Maybe I know a lot of them were just sitting there, like, you know, doing crossword puzzles and playing on their phones and stuff. So it was pretty insulting that. That was the level of seriousness they were putting into that.
But, apparently, the talking about it from the point of view of the viewership. Apparently, the viewership was a little higher than last time. So it was.
Really?
I think they had like an audience of about 12 million or something watching it, but a lot more people. Of course, the last one was at the beginning of 2020, and people were still like going out and having lives and things like that.
Right.
And so now that's not happening. So people are at home.
And people are, at this point, people are looking for new shows to binge. So, I'll try this one for a while.
Yeah, exactly. And this is one where they're up this creek without a paddle. And I've heard that's a very popular show. So. You know, the Republicans are actually shedding. When you start seeing these polls about Republicans think this or Republicans think that, I want the listeners at home to remind themselves that the Republican Party was already kind of coalescing down into a hard, you know, really mass of crazy, kind of like a white dwarf star of insanity. And it turns out that since the insurrection of January 6th, the Republican Party has been shedding people across the country. And apparently there's in 25 states, there's about 150,000 Republicans that have that quit the party just in January alone. And voting experts say that it's a much stronger than usual flight from a political party. So people are sort of saying, yeah, OK, this is what you got going. Maybe I'll try something else. So.
So it's becoming a fine reduction sauce of an insurrection.
Yummy.
Well, they are. I mean, it really is getting to be a stretch if you want to support that. It's like, you know, oh, I support insurrection. I support overthrowing legitimate elections. I mean, you know, that's getting pretty far out there. That's not, you know, we should adjust the tax tables or anything like that. Or, you know.
Or we should be slyer about it. I mean, that's been their thing so far. The thing with right. Trump, as many people have said, is, you know, Trump's big thing is he doesn't make or do anything. He just brands things, right? So he branded this movement. It was already bubbling up from below back, of course, when Obama was president. And, and it's been a feature of American history going back a few years. So he brands the movement, and he's just more overt about it than everybody else. He's more obvious about it. And that obviousness, took the form of trotting people out and trying to get them to scare the bejesus out of the people who were counting the votes.
Yeah, I mean, as far as what he was advocating, those types of things. I mean, Reagan supported a lot of those things, but back then they did it. They were a little more subtle. Remember when Reagan announced he was running for president in 1980? It was in Mississippi.
Yeah.
At the campus where the Mississippi Burning movie, it was there. Right. And that was a basic dog whistle to the racist that, I'm on your side. I get where you're coming from. And
you're just evil minded, Mel. That's why you think that.
Yeah.
How could you possibly interpret that? Or I used to remember the most poignant moment of the Reagan administration was when he went to Germany and he went to the Nazi gravesite and was paying respects to the Nazi soldiers.
Right.
And it was like, oh, that was a complete oversight. I'm sure that was nothing to do with anything.
Okay, he launched his 1980 presidential campaign at the Neshoba County Fair in Philadelphia.
You bet.
Yep. And just 16 years or 17 years after Medgar Evers slaying, and then 16 years after the lynchings there.
Right.
And he was definitely, just kind of saying, I'm one of you guys. I might have to say some things that sound crazy, but I'm one of you. But Trump never had to do that. I mean, he could just say crazy stuff. And there are good people on both sides. I mean, that's the thing now. You're talking about people who are kind of trying to shed things now. Nikki Haley came out today and issued what this article calls stunning remarks, breaking from President Trump, telling Politico in an interview that she believes he let us down.
He just let us down?
He went down a path he shouldn't have, and we shouldn't have followed him, and we shouldn't have listened to him, and we can't let that ever happen again. And, you know, and my response to that is, screw you, Nikki. I mean, come on. It's like, you knew who he was. We all knew who he was. We've known who he is since the 80s. She definitely knew who he was. I mean, she was just angling to be vice president is what it amounted to, because she thought they were going to dump Pence and that they needed a woman of color to kind of counteract Kamala. And so she was trying to position herself, and it didn't pan out. And then they try to overturn the election with a bunch of guns and zip ties, and now she's trying to separate herself, saying, "Oh, gee, we didn't know. We shouldn't have gone down that road." It's like, no, you were on that road the whole damn time, Nikki.
Well, the plan A was dump Pence, and plan B obviously was hang him. So that was apparently she wasn't totally for that one. Yeah, no, they're all fleeing. The implications. I mean, this is the thing. This is like, this kind of stuff drives me nuts, right? It's just like the invasion of Iraq. Everybody and their brother says that's a bad idea. That's not going to work. This is crazy. And then it doesn't work, and it's crazy. And then people say, who could have foreseen that? Everybody that isn't in your cult, maybe, that's kind of saw that. Hey, there's a, I don't know if you heard that Richard Shelby, he's a senator from Alabama. He said that he's not seeking a seventh term, which in Alabama, you know, you have to have at least 15 terms before you're considered a senior senator from the South.
You have to be legally dead for at least 8 years. Well, stop running.
That's the Tom Thurmond approach. Yeah, right. No. So that makes him the fourth Republican to decide not to run in 2022.
Really?
So, Nikki Haley should probably move states. What do you think?
Yeah. So, oh, I love that. You know, another one who's just had their lips surgically attached to Trump's butt has been Marco Rubio the whole time. Yeah. And now there are rumors that that they want to try to run Ivanka Trump against him in Florida to try to get her in the Senate. And I just think that's just wonderful. But that there's your reward for being, you know, this loyal soldier this whole time, and just lying and lying and lying and swallowing all this racism and hatred, and then the second they can turn on you, they will. I mean, they'll just feed you to the alligators. And,
well, again, hang Mike Pence. I mean, that guy. I mean, talk about, except, you know, every day, like clockwork. You know, he took as directed. Giant, you know, huge amounts of Trump crap and ingested it, you know. And
what are we having for lunch today? Oh, what's for lunch today? Oh, another crap sandwich. Yeah.
And it didn't make any difference.
Every day?
Yeah. There was that one time when he didn't do what he was supposed to do. That's all you need.
But, you know, I did criticize the Republicans in the summer when they had their convention, and they actually did not have a platform this year. They just said they weren't going to bother with it. But apparently now they do have a platform, which is kill Mike Pence.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the platform is where they put the gallows. So, you know, that's kind of.
Oh,
they didn't have enough room for anything else on there. That's why they decided not to have one. So,
and there's a representative from Texas named Arrington. I don't. The article doesn't have his first name for some reason, but and he doesn't refer to his first name on his Twitter page for some reason. It just says Representative Arrington, Texas.
Claggett G. Arrington. You're a Claggett. Never let anybody know.
Oh, is that it? Yeah. Maybe it's a girly name. Like, he's embarrassed. But this week they had a debate on. Renewable energy and clean energy and fossil fuels, and he referred to fossil fuels as freedom molecules. He said they're freedom molecules that come from a good old boy punching a hole in the ground.
Yeah. I used to do that work. It's not as glamorous as it sounds.
So you pulled freedom molecules out of the mountains? Is that?
I did with a bunch of other guys. And believe me, we did not feel like we were. I mean, everything's so politicized now, but at the time, we did not feel like we were freeing America. We just were trying to, you know, we're just trying to get in there and not have anything fall on us and not have our equipment, you know, blow up. And I mean, I can remember actually, one time our shift manager told us to go down in the mine for our shift, even though the guys that were coming out had registered high levels of gas, you know, deadly gas in the mine. And he was trying to get us to go down there anyway. That's, you know, so, I, you know, those guys didn't say, oh, yeah, I'll do it for America. They were like, what the hell are you talking about? You know? That was our shift manager's name was Leonard. And down in Kentucky, when somebody gets really upset and angry and sputtery, you say they're smothering. You know, that's what you said. Oh, Leonard's smothering again. And he would get smothered about this. He was kind of like in the Andy Griffith show, you know, the deputy Barney. He was a little bit like that. He'd hop up and down and, you boys get down there right now. You know what I mean? Oh, Leonard's smothering again.
Smothering. I've never heard that.
Yeah, time. That's what we say. They're smothering. Wow. Hey, you know, Monday a report came out that showed that the share of energy generated from coal has dropped during the coronavirus pandemic more than any other power source. This was a report that was done in Germany by the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research, and it was published in Nature Climate Change on Monday. And what the researchers did was they looked at emissions and electricity demand in the United States, the European Union, and India. And the lead researcher, a guy by the name of Otmar Edenhofer, nice German name, said that the findings were surprising because natural gas has traditionally had the highest operating costs of all power sources. So gas-fired plants are usually the first to be taken offline. So, you know, you don't have to generate as much. You take those guys off first because it costs more. But they think that there's been a sharp decline in gas prices, too. So that's probably what caused it. Coal releases more carbon dioxide than any form of power generation. So even a relatively small decrease has a big impact.
Wow.
See, let me give you some stats here. In some regions studied, a 20% decrease in power demand from the 2019 average corresponds to decreases in carbon dioxide emissions of up to 50%.
Wow. I've got a little fun fact about coal. Of the 100 European cities with the most air pollution, 29 are Polish. That's, yeah. Poland's coal-fired home heating creates widespread pollution. The government's trying to get off of coal, but they're not moving fast enough, apparently.
It's right. Poland is becoming the right winger's wet dream. You know, I mean, they've got the anti-abortion law. They recently prosecuted some people for acknowledging the Holocaust, right? Poland's, they have national laws that prohibit you from talking about the Holocaust in certain ways because it impugns national pride, purportedly, because the Poles were involved. And if I couldn't say that in Poland, by the way, on the air. they got the whole anti-gay thing going on there now. And then stuff like this. It's like, wow. I think that would be great. There might be a lot of people actually in the United States that would really prefer to live in Poland. That'd be that'd be their place. That's their dream ideal. That's the city on the hill, the big, smoky, overpopulated, very, 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 very straight city on the hill.
Hey, remember at the end of the Trump administration, they went on this killing spree with executions. What was called an unprecedented string of executions. 70% of, at the time, 70% of death row inmates were sick with COVID-19, but also the guards were ill. The traveling prison staff on the execution teams had the virus. They had media witnesses who were infected. And then, of course, all these people went home and infected every other people. So the records are showing that they looked at Indiana, and where they had 13 executions carried out over 6 months, and they found that these events not only were killing people as they planned, but they were super spreader events for the COVID. So, I mean, it's like they just couldn't kill enough people. We're going to execute somebody, and then we're going to infect the rest of you, and you go spread it around. It's amazing.
Got to get your last licks in, I guess.
Uh-huh. So, About six months ago in Denver, they started a program that replaces police officers with healthcare workers on mental health and substance abuse calls. And
That'll never work, Mel.
It's worked great. It's a success. Even the police chief says it's a success. Despite responding to hundreds of calls, the workers made no arrest. The city's police chief told CBS Friday he believes the program saves lives. Under the Support Team Assisted Response, or the STAR program, healthcare workers are dispatched in lieu of police when responding to incidents involving issues with mental health, poverty, homelessness, or substance abuse.
So what do the police do now? That pretty much covers it all, doesn't it?
just speeding tickets, I think. Yeah. STAR providers only respond to incidents in which there's no evidence of criminal activity, disturbance, weapons, threats, violence, and things like that, or serious medical needs. During the first 6 months of the program, health professionals responded to 750 calls. These were things like trespassing, welfare checks, and stuff like that. None of those cases required help from Denver police, and no officials were arrested. Denver Police Chief Paul Pazin, says that those were 750 fewer times the police department was called, meaning we can free up law enforcement to do what law enforcement is supposed to do, and really what law enforcement is good at, and that's addressing crime issues.
So what you're saying, Mel, is that being homeless is not a crime?
No, you don't have to go out and arrest somebody because they're homeless.
Or have
problems with opioids or something.
Yeah. So if your mental health is a little disturbed that day, you're not a criminal?
No, and handcuffs really don't treat mental health problems very well. So.
Well, at least not mine.
Yeah. Unless they're fuzzy.
Too tight. Hey, want to mention to the folks at home that President Joe Biden has officially ended, and you may not have realized this was going on, but apparently there was a national emergency that President Trump declared that enabled him to take money from the Pentagon to build his famous wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. I think right now it's more of a screen, I think. It's like one of those folding screens that, you kind of fence off part of your apartment.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
On Thursday, the White House released a letter from the president to the Speaker of the House of Representatives, notifying Congress that he's rescinded the former president's February 2019 proclamation. So it's a year that state of emergency was in effect. Yeah, there was a state of emergency, but not for the reason Trump said. So he'd been taking money that was originally intended, of course, for some other purpose altogether, and had been directing it to build his wall, which no one would appropriate any funds for. He took about $6 billion. That's billion. That's my of course, Carl Sagan billion there. Took $6 billion from military funds under a national emergency that he declared. And this was after Congress refused his demand for wall funding, which that in itself, remember, that was the longest government shutdown in the history of the United States, because they wouldn't give him the money for that. So that state of emergency is over. Just a few other ones are still going on, apparently. So,
well, good. I'm glad that emergency is finally over after a year. Did you see that Joe Biden decorated? I don't know if she did it herself, but they decorated the White House lawn this morning with Valentines and things like, and just little pink hearts and stuff that said love and take care of each other and kindness and different than
when Melania paints trees blood red, everybody complains. But when you stick actual hearts out on the lawn.
Well, that's it. Melania would have put real hearts on the lawn. Yeah. Human hearts.
In her claw-like hand, yes. Right.
Oh. China has banned the BBC World News from broadcasting in the country. It's broadcasting its television and radio regulator announced on Thursday. It's China's criticized the BBC for its reporting on coronavirus and the persecution of ethnic minorities. The BBC said it was disappointed by the decision. But you can still hear the BBC here on WORT, though. So,
yeah. It's, yes, they harumphed very loudly when the Chinese told them that. So, they harumphed around the world. Hey, the Justice Department has directed all of the U.S. attorneys appointed by Donald Trump to step down this month. The acting attorney general, Monty Wilkinson, asked the remaining Trump-era U.S. attorneys to step down. There was a conference call on Tuesday, and the Justice Department said this is how it's supposed to work. And he requested that that basically everybody by the end of February be out of their job. So they're political appointments typically made, and they're basically gonna get them out now so that when Judge Merrick Garland, who is his confirmation hearings are coming up at the end of this month, gets into office, basically they'll all be ready to go. Oh, we have a message here from Gladys. She's letting us know that both of Wisconsin's U.S. attorneys stepped down on Thursday.
All right. Wow.
And she said, I'll miss seeing Blader in press releases just because it's a cool last name. It is a cool last name.
They announced their retirement, I should say. They didn't step down, but they announced they would be stepping down.
Oh, okay. All right. So they're still about, but they're not going to be for long.
Not in a couple weeks.
Okie dokie.
I'm speaking of names. I miss names you miss. I'm really, and this goes back a ways, but I miss that the time when the Dane County Sheriff was named Lackey. Sheriff Lackey just had such a great, it was such a Blazing Saddles type
yeah,
name.
Right, exactly. You know that when you're Sheriff Lackey, your number one response is whatever you say, boss.
I didn't get a rump out of that guy. So, and Gladys does point out that Sheriff Mahoney is leaving. So former Sheriff Lackey, if you're out there, we'd love to have you back. Just for the comedy gold there.
Oh, by the way, I want to mention that there is a primary that's on February 16th, and they're expecting low turnout, which is pretty typical of our spring primary season. But basically, in terms of the absentee ballots they've gotten so far, the small number of people that usually vote in person, they expect it to be pretty low, which is sad. I mean, we need to get out there and vote in all the elections. And one of the most important things, of course, going on in this is the race for the state superintendent of public instruction. And that actually got decided in the last time,
the last anymore.
Election by 8.3% of the voting age population. Which is pretty sad. 8% decide who a statewide office. And when they had that big turnaround in the state Supreme Court, Mel, back in 2018, and we finally had somebody who wasn't dragging their knuckles that got onto the court, the turnout then was only 12%, or about 550,000 people. That's amazing.
It does. Wow.
So I knew get it was out there low, and vote in the primary. Go get your COVID now. No, I'm sure they'll be very safe. You'll just toddle in and keep your double mask on and you'll be fine.
There you go. So one more First Lady story. I have the First Lady roundup here. Michelle Obama will star alongside a pair of puppets in a children's cooking show called Waffles and Moochie. It's debuting on Netflix next month, March 16th. She'll play a supermarket owner who helps two puppet pals fulfill their dream of becoming chefs. Now, she's the greatest, isn't she? She's so wonderful.
I've had waffles, but I don't know what Moochie tastes like. Have you ever had Moochie?
I have not. I've gone out to dinner with people I've called Moochie. They always seem to disappear when the check shows up. Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WORTFM.org, or you could be listening in the future because we put this show and all of our shows up on the archives page, and you can download and listen anytime you want. And thanks to Mindless Minion D Cubed, this show is available on Spotify and iTunes, and you can probably find it wherever you like to pod your cast. So, and if you can't, let us know. We'll see if we can make that happen. So Pants, do you have anything interesting for the second half to keep the listeners on the edge of their seats?
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about France's latest COVID measures.
Okay.
And, it's allowing the workers to eat at their desks. That was forbidden by law previously. So,
wow. Oh, and we'll dig into the mailbag. In fact, we're going to dig into we've got a letter we want to respond to. We've been a little remiss on it, but we want to respond to a letter we got in 1995. So we'll be back. Gladys, do you have some announcements? I should have checked with you first. I assume we do.
Of course you do.
All right, well, let's play some, and then we'll come back with all that good stuff.
I don't care about your past. I just want how I love to laugh.
And we're back.
Hey, the CDC did warn this week that Americans should keep their masks on and take steps to make them fit more snugly. And if you're having problems getting a snug fit on your mask, you might even want to have two masks, which I was going to a local business the other day, and they very helpfully, I had a cloth mask, and they very helpfully also had a surgical mask. The surgical mask cloth combination, this very nice retail clerk told me, is the recommended way to do it. And so I was very happy that they had something that they provided. Let's see. According to Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who is the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, with cases, hospitalizations, and deaths still very high, now is not the time to roll back mask requirements.
She said, yeah.
The bottom line is masks work, and they work when they have a good fit and are worn correctly. Just like a condom. Just, you need a good fit.
They both go right over your nose.
Right, exactly. They've done an analysis of what the increase of the minimum wage to $15 an hour, which, by the way, I know our listeners are very savvy. If we move the minimum wage up to $15 an hour, it would still be lower in terms of purchasing power than the minimum wage was during the 1960s and 70s. But leaving that aside, it's obviously the case that it would cut poverty. There's no doubt about it. And people are debating on what effect it would have on the economy. Some people are saying that it would have an effect in terms of lowering the number of available jobs for people. But it also would lift about 900,000 people out of poverty and would provide raises to 27 million working people in the United States. And one of the problems with assessing the impact is that people don't think about what it means to have a higher wage. Senator Bernie Sanders, of course, who's now the chair of the Budget Committee of the Senate, has said that increasing the minimum wage would reduce federal spending because fewer people would need safety net programs. That's the idea. You don't need a safety net when you're walking on firm ground. So that's what the minimum wage would do. So some analysis has been done on this, and there's still debate, but it's looking pretty good, at least on the poverty side of the ledger.
I've got a story out of Australia. It's a little tea shop, and the owner of the tea shop is in trouble. You might say in hot water if you wanted to make a terrible pun. He's in trouble because it's come out that he's only paying his workers $10 an hour. and these are related, called alleged underpayments that the workers were getting only $10 an hour. And in Australia, the Fair Work Commission sets the minimum wage. And as of July 1st, 2020, the absolute minimum wage was $19.84.
Wow.
So this guy was paying 10 bucks an hour, and it's a big controversy and an outrage, and he's trying to battle all the bad publicity he's getting because he was underpaying his workers so much.
Wow.
So I mentioned that this is actually, this story about the COVID measure in France is a related labor story, because I made fun of it, but there's a really good reason why in France they don't want you eating at your desk. In fact, it's enshrined in the French labor code, the Code de Travail, which an article R4428/19
sure.
says specifically that employers cannot force you to work basically at your desk during your lunch hour. So the best way to make sure that that doesn't de facto happen is to make sure that people just can't eat at their desk. But unfortunately, of course, what's happened now is that, you know, you can't just go down to the boulangerie or something like that and buy something. Cafes and restaurants have, you know, are all takeout now. So basically they relaxed it temporarily during this period of trial. But it's only a relaxation. And when COVID's over, people will go back to having to eat outside of their workspace. One place for working and one place for dining. As God intended.
That's right.
You may have heard about Sister Andre. She turned 117 this week. I saw her on television. She's a nun in France, and I think Sister Andre needs to be the face of resilience in this era of the COVID virus, because in fact she survived the 1918 flu pandemic. She was 116 when she got it. Now 117. She turned 117 yesterday, and she got COVID, but she got COVID-19. But she just like, okay, whatever. She said people kept telling her she should get the vaccine, and she said, well, people should get the vaccine, but I'm 117, so really, you know, I'm okay with dying. But so give the vaccine to somebody that needs it. But she got it, and she survived. So this is a symbol of resilience. A nun, 117 years old, that lived through both the 1918 flu pandemic and has survived exposure to COVID-19. That's one tough cookie there. That's what I got to say.
How old was she? 117?
She just turned 117 yesterday. She's actually not the oldest person, documented person on the earth either. That's just, she's, you know, there's some guy in Japan that goes, ha! You know, what a kid.
One day I tried to look up what the oldest living person was, you know, ever. And but then there was, it's probably Wikipedia or something, and there was some record of somebody that they listed as like being 300 years old, and they said, but there are disputes about this. It's like, yeah, I'm sure. Speaking of old, I got my vaccine on Saturday, my first dose of the COVID vaccine. So that was really nice. I appreciate the healthcare workers making that available to.
Did you cry like a little child?
they gave me a sticker and a sucker. So that was like, well, tell me, it was really well organized. You know, you walked in and then they just kind of asked you a few questions, then they jabbed you and then you made your appointment for your second one. But then the worst part was, they wanted you to stick around for about 15 minutes just to make sure you didn't have any like really severe adverse reactions. And so they put you in this big room, like it's like a meeting room, and there was a big TV on and there was a golf tournament on, and it's like, I think I'd rather have COVID than have to watch a golf but Gladys suggested that maybe they were just trying to get people to relax or even fall asleep, you know, so they put something like
Ah, the soporific effect of golf. Yes, right.
Mindless Minion number 6 wanted to know if they could use their Mel and Floyd Mindless Minion cards to get the COVID vaccine.
You know, whatever you can do, whatever, just try it, yeah, see what happens.
Whatever's strength. So I told them I thought that you can only get the placebo with that, but
you never know. I mean, I the best driver's license photo I ever had, because you know every driver's license photo looks like Charles Manson, right?
Right.
On a bad day, and so the best driver's license photo I ever got was I went to the DMV and the two people that were working there were minions. They were like big fans of the show, and when they heard me talk, yeah, they, oh, it's Smarty Pants, and they actually like took a good photo. Asked me what I thought about it, and you know, like, is this okay? It's like the only time I've ever gotten something, you know, from being on the show is that these people were willing to give me a second chance if the photo didn't look good. That was nice. So who knows? Who knows what your mindless meeting card might bring you?
Let's see. We got these are emails sent to the melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com, by the way. If you have something you want to say to us, you can send it there, and occasionally we respond. I'm not great about responding, but I do my best. Let's see. Name announced for Key West Airport's coronavirus fighting robot. They have a robot that disinfects interior spaces of Key West International Airport, and they had a contest to pick the name, and the name was R2-Key-2. So that's kind of sweet. So
better than Bodie McBoatface, so.
That's true. And one more letter, and this goes back a little ways. I said we're not great about responding, and we're a little behind on this, but this is from 1995. We got a letter at the station. Someone found this down in the basement or the service elevator or wherever things from 1995 hang out. But it said, and it wasn't specifically addressed to us, but I kind of think we both know that it really was. It says, "Dear WORT, you're really, really bad radio. My family will not send you any more money because you sound bad. There's a buzz during the talk programs. The news is just awful. Mispronouncing words, doing interviews you aren't prepared for, and making bad jokes about the weather are not worth paying for. How can you trust that what you're saying has any truth to it at all when you can't even say it without lots of mistakes? You just waste any money we send you. Have you ever considered doing good radio instead of making jokes with each other?"
We thought about it. We did think about it.
"Get the money you say you need from one another. You won't get any from us. We won't tell you our name because one of your, quote, funny hosts would probably make fun of us on air or even threaten us. We heard you did that to a reporter." So
I got an email from She Who Must Be Obeyed. And I responded to it, and I got up really early this morning, like about 3:30, and I think it was the spring-like freshness of my brain. I actually remembered what she was referring to that's in that letter about the reporter. "Do you remember, Mel, there used to be a reporter on our local Channel 3 CBS affiliate named Katie Tsai?"
Sure.
And I kind of knew her through some other people, and we knew some people at Channel 3 at that time, because remember they did that piece about us on the Live at 5 show. Do you remember that?
Yep.
And the guy who's was after us, his brother was a reporter there, and I mean, anyway,
oh, yeah,
there was a lot of connection. Any rate, I discovered that the person who was my hairdresser at the time was cutting my hair. Was also Katie Tsai's hairdresser. And I thought that was hysterical. I did, for some reason, that was funny. Like, what is she, the hairdresser to the stars? You know what I mean? using that locution in the most ironic sense possible. So I mentioned it on the air. She got super paranoid about it. Like, I was revealing something really important about her movements or something. Today I would be more respectful of this, I think, because, you know, who knows, maybe she had a stalker or something. I don't know.
Right.
But she acted like I had given away the nuclear launch codes or something. And she was super paranoid. And she told everybody I was out to get her. And I was like, and I know this because other people that work at Channel 3 told me. And the problem was that she and some other people were also in a competition for who was going to be the head, like the anchor, like the head reporter there for a while. And they were happy. They were like, give her hell. You know, it's like, no, I'm not giving her hell. I just pointed out. I did see her one day, by the way, at the shop. And this is probably what drove her over the edge. So my appointment was right after hers. And I said, are there any clippings left around? Cause I was going to save them in a baggie. Now that's probably when she thought this guy is really, really mean. But I mean, the beautician was laughing. I mean, you know, I'm actually not creepy. I could care less about Katie's son. Any rate, I think what had happened at that point, it had got ramped up of like her thinking that I was being mean. And I thought, well, I'll make a fun of it. But of course, it made it worse. So anyway.
Well, plus you had the same hairdo, too. So
I did. We had exactly the same haircut. Jealous. No, actually, you know what happened is that CBS mandated after that. And it had nothing to do with that. But I didn't see her there anymore because CBS mandated that all of them had to go to a company selected. They had a contract with a local beautician. Sure. They all had to go there because they also wanted somebody that could do their makeup and stuff like that. So anyway,
yeah.
Okay. So she stopped doing that. So I think that's who they're referring to.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah.
So that's Lister comments from 1985.
And 95.
In 95, so
yeah, not 85. From 1492.
Have you ever considered doing good radio?
Yeah, we debated that. Actually, she who must be obeyed said that not to do good radio because people apparently like whatever this drivel is. So,
right. Hey, a team of astronomers has confirmed the orbit of a distant planetoid at the farthest reaches of our solar system, and they've nicknamed it Far, Far Out. It's a minor planet. It's almost four times farther from the sun than Pluto. It's the most distant planetoid ever detected in our solar system. Far, Far Out was first detected in 2018, beating out the previous record holder, Far Out.
Hence the name.
The team responsible for both discoveries has an ongoing survey map to the outer solar system. Far, Far Out's journey around the sun takes about 1,000 years, and for context, that's about as long as 2020 seemed to most of us. So. Far, Far Out is estimated to be about 250 miles across, so it's on the small end of the dwarf planet spectrum.
Yeah. So the only answer to that, the only response to that I can give is far out, man. So no, actually, we've got, you know, Mars is getting, you know, Earth attacks. I mean, they're having problems on Mars right now because we're going there. And apparently China is going there and the UAE is already there. Right. They've arrived this week. They sent a robotic probe called Hope to the red planet, and it's the first interplanetary mission that's ever been undertaken by an Arab nation, so good for you guys. And so they're there to, I think they're looking for oil, so see if they find any. No, they're just trying to figure out, you know, what's going on. It's they really want to know what's happening. There's the spacecraft was actually launched from Japan because the UAE is not a good place to launch things from, apparently. And it's working just the way it's supposed to. And now next up is the Chinese. They've landed on the moon three times, but they decided Mars was next on the list. So so they've got their guy up there and moving around as well. So. They're going to land. I don't think they're not just going around like the folks from the United Arab Emirates are. The Chinese are actually going to land something there and start moving around and seeing what they can find. So if I was a Martian right now, I'd be a little worried.
Yeah. Well, they're sick of getting probed, and I can relate to that, but so. Well, then America has got a Martian probe that's landing like in a week or so, I don't think.
Yes, they do.
Something like that.
That's lovely.
I'm actually on that one because they did do this thing where you can sign up and they put your name on like on a little chip that's on
really?
The Yeah, so I'm and then they're so cute. They'll send you like a little boarding pass and stuff and so I my name is actually on that new Martian the latest probe. So I'm going to Mars.
I'm so impressed. You actually have beat me in the nerd competition here. I'm in awe. Thank you. That's great. Wow. I didn't realize you could do that. That's quite nice.
Yep. So, you know what else you can do? You can teach pigs to use joysticks with computers.
Already done it.
New researchers in the U.S. say they've successfully trained 4 pigs to manipulate a joystick and control a cursor on a monitor.
Hey.
Potentially, there may be more that pigs are capable of learning and understanding and responding to than we've previously envisioned, said Professor Candace Crony of Purdue. Crony, that'd be another good sheriff's name.
Sheriff Crony. Right. That would be the deputy, I think. You'd have Lackey and Crony. Yeah.
Yeah. This was in published in the Frontiers of Psychology. Crony and co-author Sarah Boyson report they used tasty treats to train the pigs to move the joysticks using their snouts while watching a computer screen. Oh, this sounds adorable. The researchers then presented the quartet with a video game in which the pigs had to use this joystick to maneuver a cursor until it collided with one of 4 wall-like structures on the screen. Upon collision, the game made a bloop sound and the pig received a treat.
Just like an actual e-sport.
The more successful the pig was, the fewer the number of walls presented in the game. They analyzed 50 trials by each pig and determined how often the pig hit the target. The results reveal that 2 pigs named Hamlet and Omelet, they were able to complete the task better when presented with 2 walls or a single wall on a screen, but not with 3 walls. So it got a little too complicated for Hamlet and Omelet. And the picture was more mixed for Ebony and Ivory, 2-year-old male micro pigs. They had 15 months of training and testing. Both did better when presented with the 3 walls, but only Ivory did better than the chance on the 2-wall condition. And then, and sadly, they outgrew the game. They got too big and too fat to actually
play
the game anymore. So
I thought you meant they just got bored.
Yeah.
Unlike humans, pigs quickly tire of such things. I just don't think you should be naming pigs things like Hamlet and Omelet. I'm sorry. That seems kind of insulting. I don't know. I think the thing is about animal intelligence experiments like that is how we're surprised. I mean, how did we get to the place where we're able to, you know, do the complex things that we do? Well, obviously, there must be some characteristics of figuring out how things work that are endemic to organic life. So, I mean, I just kind of... Like, yeah, well, that's cool. It's good to see what they can do. Yeah. That's nice. And, of course, you know they got to be smart because we kill them and eat them. So that's pretty much us all over, you know. Oh, there's a whale over there? Quick, I bet that would be yummy. You know, let's get that.
I need a lamp. Let's kill it.
Yeah.
Hey, hippos imported illegally into Colombia by Pablo Escobar have gone feral in the lush tropical countryside, and now they must be culled before their invasive presence starts to wipe out indigenous flora and fauna, according to pesky scientists. So this was in the 80s when Pablo Escobar, the big drug lord, decided he wanted his own little zoo. So he brought in a bunch of hippos, kangaroos, giraffes, and elephants, and also established the world's biggest cocaine empire.
Well, those things are not unrelated, I'm sure. You know, Elon Musk has, you know, his own space force, and, you know, Pablo Escobar has hippos. What do you want?
So he was hunted down and killed by police way back in 1993, but the hippos and a lot of the other animals were abandoned, and they were just kind of let loose. And since then, government attempts to control their reproduction have had no real impact on the population, with the number of hippos increasing in the last 8 years from 35 to somewhere between 65 and 80. You know, if you've got 80 hippos, too, you know it. I mean, that's that's bad. An ecologist down there said that, I believe that is one of the greatest challenges of invasive species in the world. I got to tell you, I felt really bad this summer when I had had a bunch of raccoons in my attic, and I'm just glad they weren't hippos. That
apparently they multiply pretty quickly. Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
things are happening there at the homestead.
Oh yeah, the dogs are protecting me from the chipmunk or something.
Yeah, they're at Fort Kickass.
The International Olympic Committee has condemned derogatory remarks about women by the head of the Tokyo 2020 Games, Yoshiro Mori. He's actually resigned. He says that he complained that last week the meetings tended to go on too long because women in attendance talk too much.
Oh, that's it.
Yep. The IOC said that those were absolutely inappropriate comments and a contradiction of the IOC's commitments and reforms of its Olympic Agenda 2020.
It's our house band there, I think, isn't it?
Oh, all right, well, it's almost time to declare the weekend. It's going to be a lovely weekend. 170 below zero. And we're all going to die. Yeah. So enjoy that.
Yeah. I'm going to pretend I'm on the surface of Pluto. That's going to, you know, kind of.
You know, I looked it up the other day. It was actually warmer on places on Mars than it was in Wisconsin.
All right.
So, all right, stick around. Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks for You with the Real Jaguar and the other Mr. S. Then there's Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday on My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. Have a great weekend, everybody. You are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Pants, good to see you. Have a great week. Gladys, good to see you as always. Take care. See you soon. Have a great weekend, everybody. Bye-bye. Cause you got to use what you got. Get just what you want. Hey. Hot pants. Hey. Hot pants. Smoking. Hot pants make you shoot yourself.